Yeah, welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, we put Ghana first. It's brought to you by Bank of Africa. As strong as a group and close as a partner, MTN everywhere you go. Ashesi University, educating ethical and entrepreneurial leaders for Africa. Robert & Sons Optical Services, that's your comprehensive eye care service provider for 33 years plus. My Way Insurance, dial *165# on MTN to join My Way today. Syntex Tanks is strong, it's tough. Flamingo Paint, simply superior. DBS Industries Limited, roofing, fear. And here are some of your messages that we want to share with you. Collins Little Tete says, early marriage has devastating consequences for a girl's life. Effectively, child marriage ends her childhood. Girls are forced into adulthood before they are physically and mentally ready. Frimpong Benny says there is absolutely no justification to the child marriage issue. Our dear Ghana Traditional Council should accept wrongdoing so we will all move on. The most important thing is to learn from all this going forward. The more they try to explain, the more they expose themselves. Perez Ewonam says the occasion may simply be a traditional rite devoid of any sexual connotations. Yet the meticulous organization and moderation of the ceremony resemble a marriage in the tangible realm. This aspect is what should engage the attention of the custodians of the Ga tradition. Now remember that there are chiefs within the Ga state who have criticized this and said that it should not be tolerated at all. Gasma says they are good to sleep with at 16 but can't marry at 16. Okay. I don't support child marriage. It's abhorrent. Let's increase the age threshold for consensual sex to 18 or above 18. Nilante Van Kernissen, is it? Says that, sadly, the conversation about the Gbogbo Shrine happenings alienates Ga Dangbe culture, which must be part of the wholesome, edifying conversation. Okay, we hear you. Thank you very much for those messages. And then Yakubu Ibn Chambers says that I only find a subject worthy of public discourse and debate when the law isn't succinct on it. The issue of betrothal, what is the law's stance? What is the Constitution's stance? Are there ambiguities in the Constitution? Was the girl at the center of all these controversies a minor or not per the Constitution? It must be noted that there is no immunity for wrong, customary, and traditional practices in the Constitution of Ghana. Simpliciter. Posterity is waiting to judge the nation based on how we handle this issue. Thanks, Yakubu, for your message. Eraba Opoku Bediako says that we need to intensify our education like you mentioned. We are discussing this marriage thing today because somebody took a picture of the ceremony and circulated it. And for all you know, a deity who can buy a see-through has already benefited for investing in it. If that's the case, then the harm might have already been caused. How can we be a little more proactive to teach our girls to speak up against these things? And where do they run to if someone is pursuing them? Ideally, parents should be educating them, but where do the girls run to when the parents themselves are in support of these practices? Interesting there. I'll read this very final one It's a bit long, but let me see how much of it I can read. It's from Kweku Entry Boesiako, and he says, the Constitution in Article 28.1 provides that 21C, in all cases, the interests of the children are paramount. D, children and young persons receive special protection against exposure to physical and moral hazard. The Children's Act prohibits all kinds of marriage for children under the age of 18. So first, this case is not merely about sexual relations with a minor. In fact, the age for consensual sex is 16, lower than the age for marriage, which is 18. Marriage places huge responsibilities on a young woman, especially in a patriarchal, traditional priesthood setting. Consensual sex, while it still places emotional and psychological burden on a young girl, pales into insignificance compared to what marriage at the age does to the young woman. Second, this marriage, whether to a 63-year-old priest or to a 1,000-year-old deity, is not about the interest of the child, which our constitution mandates. Rather, it is about the interest of a 63-year-old man and his associates and like-minded traditional folk. Third, what is really at stake is that the law seeks to ban all kinds of marriage for a child under 18 because a child cannot be saddled with the huge responsibilities that come with whatever kind of marriage when that child cannot consent to being subjected to those responsibilities. He says a lot more, but this is where I will end this particular message. Now, let's get to the scholarship secretariat and ask a number of questions. And joining me on Zoom is, among other people, Suleimana Brahima, who is with the Fourth Estate, the Media Foundation for West Africa, who set up the Fourth Estate. And I think they are celebrating, is it 2 or 3 years now? Suleimana Brahima is Executive Director, Media Foundation for West Africa. Then we have also Suleimana Isifu, Research Fellow, Hans Rotenberg Institute, University of Hohenheim, Germany. The last time, I'm not sure if I got the pronunciation correct, but this time he will pardon me. Dr. Clementa Park is MP, Bulsa South, and Deputy Ranking Member, Education Committee of Parliament. Here in the studio is Richard Jemfi, Director for International Relations and Partnerships, Ghana Scholarship Secretariat. Gentlemen, thank you for your time and welcome to Newsfile. Thank you. Right. So, Suleimana Brahima, let's start with you. Media Foundation for West Africa, your product, that project, the Fourth Estate. You are getting a lot of plaudits in the Ghanaian society for the research-based journalism that you have been doing over the period. Understand, you are how many years old now? Suleimana?
Hi, Samson. Can you hear me?
Repeat what you said. I didn't hear you.
No, I said that it's been 3 years since we started the project.
Right. And you focus on, how do you go about the journalism under the Fourth Estate?
Well, so the Fourth Estate was created or established as a public interest investigative journalism project under our media and good governance program. So over the period, we've had a program that is focused on how we can support, promote, and empower the media to promote good governance, transparency, accountability. And it is under that program that we do all the media capacity building programs, we do the exchange programs, you know, we send people to newsrooms to offer training, sometimes we offer some micro grants to newsrooms, all with the view of supporting the media and empowering them to be able to support, you know, and promote accountability, transparency, and all of that. But I got to a point we realized that we were investing so much and not getting enough of the results that we wanted to see. And that is because you empower a journalist, and sometimes it's either they move on, or the newsrooms that we are engaging may not even have the capacity to be able to absorb whatever we want them to do. And sometimes also it's all about the integrity of the people you are dealing with and who owns even the media that you are working with. So the idea was then, why don't we set up a project internally, bring on board or recruit a number of journalists who become staff of the Media Foundation for West Africa and allow them and empower them to do the kind of journalism that we want to see in society. Mm. So in 2021, the whole idea was crafted, and then we had conversations with people like Manasseh and a few others, and they agreed to come on board. And so Manasseh was brought on board to lead it as the editor-in-chief. Then we had people like Edwin Apia, Seth Bopere, and a few others who joined. But we also realized that to make the impact that we want to make, it is important to bring on board young people, very smart, who have just finished their journalism training, so that we can groom them to be the journalists that we want them to be. And so we started what we call the Next Generation Investigative Journalism Fellowship and brought on board, 10 journalists at a time. So after every cohort, we will retain some of them that we believe have the potential, have the talent to do what that we want to do. And so quite a number of the stories that we are doing are actually being done by journalists who are maybe sometimes less than 5 years in the field, of course, being guided by their seniors. So this scholarships one, for example, you see is done by Seth Bopere and Thelma. Thelma is quite new in the field, but given the orientation and the training that she has, she knows what it takes to do public interest journalism. So these are journalists who are staff of the Media Foundation, but are set and focused on doing public interest investigative journalism.
Right. Of course, the Minister for Information, Kujio Opon-Nkrumah, then, when he had to give his first report to Parliament about the use of the RTI Act, singled the Media Foundation for West Africa, Fourth Estate, out for praise for being the ones who have used the Right to Information Act the most. Of course, we know that the Media Foundation for West Africa participated or actually recruited lawyers, hired lawyers and other persons to go around the country to sensitize people about the Right to Information Act and the rest of them. This particular story about the scholarship secretariat is a product of the use of the RTI Act, correct?
Yes.
Okay, tell us about it.
So, sometime in 2021, there were a lot of concerns and talk about how the scholarship scheme was being abused in the country. People were complaining about having applied and not getting the scholarship. Then at the time, you also had a lot of instances where you would have somebody splash, some excellent grades by maybe somebody who has completed secondary school, and has no resources to be able to further their education, and so they were appealing for funds to be able to pay their fees of 6,000 cedis or 7,000 cedis to get to the university. And so we then at that point said, okay, if people are complaining about this so much, and the scholarship secretariat is not publishing the list of the beneficiaries for all of us to know who are the people getting it, why don't we just file an RTI request to say, can you give us the list of beneficiaries of your scholarship scheme? Mind you, prior to that, Mr. Domelebo, the former Auditor General, had done an audit of GetFund scholarships and established certain acts of impropriety and recommended that all scholarships must be forwarded to the scholarship secretariat in terms of funding for scholarships. So we did the application. Initially, they refused to grant the request on the basis that what we were requesting for had issues of privacy because we are looking for people's names and data and so on and so forth. We did an internal appeal. It didn't work. And so eventually we had to file a petition with the RTI Commission. The Commission then subsequently determined that no, they are basis of saying what we were requesting had issues of privacy cannot be right because we are talking about how public funds have, and therefore they were ordered to provide the list that we have requested. And when we requested the list, we asked that we want it in PDF format because it's always easy to have electronic, to deal with electronic data. Mm. They then said, well, they were willing to give it to us, but they are using a system that would not allow them to generate the data in PDF format. So the only way they could do it is to give it to us in hard copy. And we said, okay. So eventually, they printed for us thousands and thousands of pages of data. In our own view, it was a way of frustrating us and to say, look, how can they handle thousands of pages, if not up to, I can say that it would have been up to about 10,000 pages of printed documents. But we also said, well, since we need a thing, we'll take our time and analyze it. So we have to type out the entire material so that we can then begin the analysis. And that's how come it took us from 2021 all the way to now to be able to produce the story. So after it was typed out, the analysis, the aggregations were done, were established, which were the foreign scholarships, which were the local scholarships, who got what to what university, is there any connection of those beneficiaries to the political class, are there people who got double scholarships, are there people who got money for courses that could have been done here easily, and in fact, in some instances, we came to the conclusion that some awards to particular individuals could have sponsored about 60 students to do the same course here in Ghana. So one person takes money that could have paid for the full course of 60 students in Ghana for the same program. Not a different program, for the same program. So if it is BS marketing or MA marketing, if you look at how much is being paid to that individual, it could cover about 60 students here in Ghana. So that's how the story evolved, and that's how we've gotten to where we are. And as has been said, from next week, we'll be putting out the entire data so that Ghanaians will know who benefited. It's not everybody that we know, but once we put it out there, already some people are beginning to say, oh, yes, I got a scholarship for UK, but I never got the one that they said I got for US. Mm. So people are beginning to come out, and I'm sure eventually we'll get a situation where people's names are there, but they never got the money or they never got to benefit from the scholarship.
Okay. All right. We have also been inundated by messages and emails by people who say they are Ghanaians who live abroad and have had issues with the scholarship secretariat, among others. We will see how we can share a couple of those verified messages with our viewers. But I want you to hold on. You say, what prompted this investigation was the report done by the Auditor General covering 2012-2017, and which was released sometime in 2020, and we all began to discuss it, how people got appalled at how people like Matthew Opoku Prempeh, the energy minister, then education minister, right? Mm-hmm. Sarah Adua Safo, MP for Dome, and who was also minister for, PPA? And they got the scholarships. One person, Matthew Opoku Prempeh's scholarship alone was said to be able to train as many as 6 MPhil students. But he took that amount of money to go to Harvard for only 3 weeks or so. Adua Safo also did almost a similar thing, and people were appalled at it. and they got criticized. And if you remember, Matiopoku Prempeh actually later said that he does not regret taking the Get Fund scholarship. And he said, I will do it again if the opportunity presents itself, when he appeared before Parliament for vetting. Yao Daniel Domelevo, who did that audit and got vilified by persons within the MPP for it, has been speaking to me. Let's listen to him briefly, whether he feels that some lessons have been learnt after that audit process, before I come to engage all of you again. So we are privileged to have the benefit of the knowledge to be shared with us by the former Auditor General, Daniel Yao Domelevo. And he, if you recall, supervised the audits that in 2020 revealed the unthinkable. Mr. Domelevo, thank you so very much once again for your time. Looking at the revelations from the Fourth Estate publication, I suppose that you will not be surprised. Your audit at the time found how people who were well-to-do and had no need at all, like Dr. Matthew Poku Prempeh, Adjoa Safo, all received hefty scholarship to go and pursue courses in Harvard. At the time when we put together, Matthew Poku Prempeh, what he received alone, could take care of MPhil students, as many as 6 students, to undertake an MPhil to assist this country. And yet he alone received that money for a conference or for a study for only 2 weeks in Harvard. What do you say about the revelations you are seeing now?
Thank you very much, Samson. I am not surprised at all about the revelation, because I have said time and again that when you have a system or a country in which there are no consequences for misbehavior or wrongdoing, it becomes the norm and people do it with impunity. So it doesn't come to me as a surprise at all that the behavior or that practice is still ongoing. But the only part which shocked me a bit is that those who are responsible for that, they are not shameful at all. Mm. It doesn't occur to them that there is anything wrong, including the administrator of the scholarship secretariat. Mm. Is telling us that I listened to an interview on Joy FM or radio, I think TV, mm. and where I saw him saying that, well, there is no legal framework. That is why he thinks the discretion is being exercised that way. And I say, I beg to differ. Even if there is no legal framework, being the administrator and the position you've held for almost 7 years, shouldn't you come out with some policies which can guide to ensure that you don't take capricious decisions and you are not arbitrary in the discharge of your duties? I couldn't wrap my head, I guess, around it.
Right.
So that is where we are.
Right. So in fact, in that audit, you were assured that they were going to take steps to correct the wrongs that had been identified by your auditors at the time, including the wrong that over 3,000 applicants, only 12 of that number submitted complete documents. You had a sort of a relief at the time, and you gave them a benefit of the doubt when they promised and assured you that they were now going to put in place the guidelines and the policies for the award of the scholarship.
Yes, Samson, that is true, because I thought maybe it never occurred to them that they need to come out with policies or guidelines in order to be objective and ensure that they are serving the public interest instead of other interests. So one would have expected that from 2020 to today, now they will have come out with policies and guidelines so to help people. Anyway, I'm happy to hear that the administration of that scholarship has moved from Gate Fund to the scholarship secretariat. Mm. That by itself is good, because that is what the law requires.
Right.
But if the scholarship secretariat has not been able to do better than Gate Fund, then it is regrettable, because I thought that is their preoccupation 24/7. So if all that you do is to administer scholarship, you don't just wake up every day and say, let's give it to Mr. Tall, Mr. Short, Mr. Fat, so, so and so. No, you must have criteria, and that criteria must be published or made known to everybody. Said that, and even I don't think they can even sit in the comfort of their or in their office and come out with such a policy or a criteria. They need to do a bit of consultation to get different stakeholders' input, so that they come out with a policy which will serve the interests of the country. Mm. But if it is still not there, then let me say it's very regrettable.
Right. You had also flagged the breach of the law at the time. Section 2, subsection 2 of the Get Fund law.
Subsection 2B.
Yes, correct. Thank you very much. That these scholarships were to be for gifted but needy students. And they were supposed to be for the sponsorship of local sponsorships, not foreign. At the time, your audit had found that out of the over 3,000 applicants, you had only about 800 that were local sponsorship. This revelation, again, by the Fourth Estate, shows that no steps have been taken to correct this.
Yes. And if you remember, my critics during those days came out with some flimsy excuse that those scholarships were granted under E instead of B, the section 2B.
Right.
They said it was granted under the E, which says that the minister, together with the board, can also use part of the Gate Fund to fund other education-related policies or activities.
Mm.
So they shamefully did that. And, well, I'm not a lawyer. You are. I was. It was, to me, it was actually funny, because they've forgotten that the Gate Fund has what they call distribution or allocation formula, which goes to Parliament for approval.
Right.
And in that formula, the E is not there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how.
But even granted that anybody wanted to use Section 22E, 22E, if we grant those making that argument, if we grant them their argument, then you may say it is a window, a small window. You don't turn that window into a gaping door.
The main door, yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. That is my problem. And to be honest with you, it disturbs me a lot that people abuse scholarships for gifted but needy students this way. But what baffles my mind, honestly, to speak, is that the secretariat allows this to continue.
Hmm.
First, I thought when we did the audit, they didn't know. But this has been brought to the fore, and they got to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the gentleman who, Kingsley Abuaji, or so, who was then Dr. Kingsley Abuaji, or those days, he was quite new in the office, so I thought maybe he didn't know about it. So I thought maybe they didn't know.
Mm.
So at least since the audit has revealed some of these things, it was very easy to say, look, now let's see what is expected of us. The law says this. We will do the right thing. And let me be honest with you, Samson. If we have a society in which the highest paid class can classify themselves as the needy, then we are in trouble. And someone I heard on one forum was talking about the salary of the minister, that the minister's salary makes him needy. So let's grant it. A minister takes home about 25,000. And he is needy. Do you know that some of the teachers and the public servants, they don't even take home 5,000?
3,000. 2,000.
Say again.
2,000. Okay. 3,000.
Thank you. So if you are taking between 25,000 to 30,000 a month, and you are needy, and so it is you who is supposed to benefit from this fund, then I find it unfortunate. But like the point you raised, the law actually limited the scope or the geographical space in which you can apply scholarship. It says to fund second cycle and tertiary education in Ghana.
Correct.
The law is very clear about that. And people are doing courses in Britain, in US, etc. Even the new report that I've seen, some of them have benefited twice, mm-hmm. some two times in a year, some after 1 year, the next year they get it again. And I'm like, it's not a surprise. Why would it be a surprise? Because the government or the executive is not minded to take any action when indiscipline of this nature comes to the fore. I thought the president would have called his ministers or his at least the public servants under his discipline and said, please, refund that money within 24 hours with interest or I fire you. Nothing. Hmm. So why do you think people will not move in and continue abusing? Mm. So that is where we are. I maintain my position.
Coming to know that despite the findings in the audit we are referencing now and all the breaches that occurred and the wastage and the cost to the state at the time, where you could see that because of political pressure, they even had to spend more than they had, their budget. They spent 300%
exactly.
more than they had.
Yes.
And still, this is going on. In the interim, what do you think ought to be done? Solutions. What should we do?
Solutions. We have to get some minded Ghanaians to challenge this behavior in court, at least to injunct the secretariat from misapplying the public funds. Mm. One, I don't know the total money which the secretariat got during this period were all from gate fund. But if portion of the gate fund went into this, then I think there is illegality and we may have to challenge and stop them. And if possible, we should seek a way of recovering this money from the beneficiaries or punishing whoever is creating this opportunity. I think this finding of the fourth estate should not be let go just like the audit.
When you talk about recoveries, are you thinking about perhaps a special investigative committee going into this, or you are simply looking at the resort to surcharges and disallowances when it comes to the auditing process?
First and foremost, if I was in charge of the auditing process, I was going to disallow and surcharge. That one, there's no two ways about that. I was going to do that. But now that I don't have that powers and the Auditor General is independent, I cannot push him and we cannot push him. I think, and this is a legal advice I need, I think if it is possible, we should get a team to go to court against these guys and say, refund the money to the consolidated fund or back into the gate fund or to the scholarship fund, because you are not one of the intended beneficiaries. Mm. I don't know if this is an action we can take. If it is possible, then I call upon well-meaning Ghanaians, let's come together and see what we can do to recover these monies. Mm.
Will you be ready to be one of the plaintiffs in such a suit?
I'll be happy to be the first plaintiff.
Thank you very much for your time. As always, Mr. Daniel Yao Domelevo is former Auditor General of the Republic of Ghana. And during his era, they conducted an extensive audit that revealed, perhaps for the very first time, how the scholarships are abused. Right. So, Suleimana Isifu, I'll come to you briefly. Suleimana Ibrahima, are you still there? We just saw Suleimana Ibrahima. Suleimana Ibrahima comes back in just some 2 minutes. Give us the highlights of the documentary, what they feel or they find to be wrong with the process. The scholarship secretariat's officer here will answer these questions. But Suleimana Isifu, you a couple of years ago, or when was it, that you wrote this article about it, and I've been reading it. Yes, that was January of this month. But last year, we were doing an interview with you, and you mentioned this issue as well. What do you know about the process that you think is wrong?
Thank you, Samson, and greetings to your cherished viewers and listeners. So I would like to start off by commending the scholar, commending Fourth Estate for giving us or providing us a basis to discuss the scholarship secretariat. And I would also like to announce to Domelevo that I'm willing to join his suit as one of the plaintiffs, because I think that the scholarship secretariat receives enormous resources. Recently, I was just trying to compare their budget with a critical state institution like Maslok. So while Maslok had been budgeted with 71 million Ghana cedis, there was a budget of over 300 million for the scholarship secretariat. So it bears questioning how Ghana is benefiting from such enormous commitment to the scholarship secretariat. Yes, so I have been on this crusade against the scholarship secretariat because of what I know firsthand. And Samson, you know that by virtue of my research travels across Europe, I've met a couple and a number of many students in many conferences and many academic fora. And they tell me stories that, for example, I go to France for a conference and I meet a Ghanaian student who tells me his experience with scholarship secretariat. And then I go to Belgium for a conference, and a Ghanaian also tells me a story that is similar to what the person in France told me. I go to the UK, and I meet a number, dozens of students who are telling me their experiences with scholarship secretariat. The same thing in Germany, you meet students, and they tell you stories about scholarship secretariat. And all these stories, when you tally them, you see a semblance, or you see a trend that makes it impossible for you to ignore the stark reality or probability that these stories are probably true by virtue of the preponderances and the corroborative nature of the kinds of stories that you hear from these students. Samson, I have heard students, for example, tell me that they pay huge sums of money, and some have told me they paid as much as £5,000 in order to get a scholarship of, say, £40,000. I have heard students tell me that they pay sometimes just 30,000 Ghana cedis, just to get a letter to prove that scholarship secretariat is willing to give them a scholarship. So in essence, they are not buying the scholarship. They are just buying what we call an offer letter from the scholarship secretariat. And this offer letter, they see it as a guarantee of they gaining visa. So then you raise, then the question of visa racketeering also sets in. So when I hear people say that Fourth Estate has just come up with people who have received scholarships and that there's nothing wrong with it, what I'm saying is that scholarships, Fourth Estate has only provided us an avenue to look deeply into matters that are gangrening or matters that are rotting as far as the scholarship secretariat is concerned. Samson, I'll tell you a story, a very grim story of a student who scholarship secretariat transferred 8,000 euros to the person. And the scholarship secretariat apparently has intermediaries who normally, so on record in Ghana, the student has received 8,000 euros. But then the scholarship secretariat, using a corrupt intermediary, will come back door and take the money back and give you a percentage out of that.
Seriously?
So let's say they transfer. Yes, this is stories that I've seen. And in fact, I have seen evidence of somebody whose bank account was closed down because when the scholarship secretariat sent the intermediary to take the money, the person went to withdraw the money at a go in an European bank. I don't want to mention the country for fear of they victimizing the students in these countries. So when he went to withdraw the money, all of it from the bank, it triggered an alert within the banking system. How can somebody come in? Because in Germany, for example, you're allowed to withdraw 2,000 euros at a go. So when they saw such withdrawals happening within a short space of time, it triggered an alert within the banking system. They wrote a letter to this person and closed down his bank account. I have seen the letter with my own eye. The person's bank account was closed. Why? Because when scholarship secretariat transferred the money, the person went to withdraw the money and gave 6,000 euros out of what was transferred to the corrupt agent who was fronting this whole thing for the scholarship secretariat. So when we talk about the scholarship secretariat, the problems associated with the scholarship secretariat are enormous. There is a problem of nepotism. I have seen people who have PhDs and have still been offered scholarship by scholarship secretariat to go and do PhD again. So at this point, you ask yourself, while there are many young Ghanaians who are struggling to even obtain a first degree just because they don't have money, others have the luxury of doing a second PhD or a second master's, all under monies provided by our taxes. So when you hear stories or the kind of justifications that come out from the scholarship secretariat, it makes me want to throw up because it tells me that people who are manning the scholarship secretariat have no conscience at all. To say that they are Ghanaians or these people who have been given are Ghanaians and so they are deserving, that is not an excuse enough. In every reasonable society, you provide what we call a safety net for the weak. And that is why it is commendable that His Excellency Nanado brought the free SHS. So it provides safety net for the poor. But upwards of from the free SHS or upwards from HHS, there are many students who are confronted with enormous challenges in terms of progression. And some of us receive a lot of requests from these students. And when I see these requests and I compare it with the stories that I know about the scholarship secretariat, I become very sad and very annoyed as a Ghanaian. Samson, there are stories where Ghanaians have been sponsored to go and study, for example, in the UK. And then, under normal circumstances, when you are sponsored with, I mean, state funds, you are expected to come back and assist the state in one way or another. Do you know that there are, for example, students who, after completion, because the government that has issued you the visa knows that you were sponsored by your government, you are requested to go back. They will request what they call a letter of consent from your scholarship secretariat in case you want to continue your stay in that particular country. Now, there are some graduates who are paying £3,000 to the scholarship secretariat to get what they call the letter of consent. And do you know what they do in the UK and other countries? They become janitors. They begin to serve in the old age homes after being sponsored with thousands of pounds of Ghanaian hard, cold cash. They become janitors, and in order to get the letters of consent, some of them told me personally that they paid upwards of £3,000 to get a letter of consent in order to get what they call a graduate visa for job-seeking business in those countries. And then they become janitors in those countries. So this is what our taxes are being used for. Scary. And then somebody sits at the scholarship secretariat and tries to justify this. I wonder if such people have conscience at all.
Hold on there for me. And Suleimana, I need you in 2 minutes. Suleimana Brahima. Okay, I understand we have lost him. I was going to ask him the question. Dr. Clement Apak, you would take that in just a couple of minutes, and I come to the scholarship secretariat to answer the many questions that are coming up. You take thousands of scholarships, and then you go and look for a couple, you know, tens, maybe even if it's 100, who are connected to politicians. Freddie Blaise's daughter, then Oforia Tai's, relative, then all those other people. Is that fair? Because there will be thousands others who got it without being connected. Is that not correct?
Well, Samson, let me express my appreciation to you and to the Fourth Estate for bringing us this far as government scholarships are concerned. It is important to state that while the scholarship secretariat is expected to deal with matters to do with education, and I believe funding the education of Ghanaians who are brilliant but needy, the scholarship secretariat is not under the auspices. It's not under the auspices of the Ministry of Education. So the Education Committee of Parliament has no jurisdiction over its activities. It is housed under the Office of the President. Having said so, I have taken a personal interest in this matter, also because over the years, I've received several complaints about how brilliant but needy students have applied and have been denied the scholarship. And all the narrative so far confirms what I've also known. But to your question, I don't believe it is unfair. I don't believe it is unfair because as a society, we ought to make it a priority to provide avenues for the less fortunate to be able to rise, thrive, and contribute. If not for greed, selfishness, cronyism, blatant corruption, and abuse of office and political power, how can anyone justify a situation where the son of a farmer in Fumbisi, who earns less than 500 Ghana cedis per annum, should be denied a scholarship in favor of a sitting minister of state? So regardless of how you cut, spice, and dice it, it is simply wrong. Mm-hmm. And that is why I have argued that in all of this, we ought to be looking at a legislative framework that should regulate and define and establish who, how scholarships are awarded. And until we do that, and also extricate the scholarship secretariat from the direct control of the executive, from the office of the president, I am sorry to say that this that we are talking about, we are not going to see any change.
Okay, now hold on there. Hold on there for me. And I come to Richard in the studio here. Now, Richard, when you look at this investigative piece, really, it's your reports, your documentations that you have handed them, and they have taken the time to go through, and they found out how party executives, you know, I'm talking about MPP party executives, you know, in good number are getting all these scholarships. How do you justify that? How do you justify why they highlight a number of people? Freddie Blaise's daughter, he's GMPC chairman, he's of the MPP. He's been where to parliament. The wife is an ambassador. I mean, they ask the question, from where they sit, why should that person be entitled when someone else, you know, who is poor, cannot be entitled? How do you justify these things?
Thank you, Samson, and a very good morning to your cherished listeners and viewers. I must commend the Fourth Estate because for a good work done in some aspects. But before I get into your question, there are some misconceptions, and I think it is good that Fourth Estate has actually brought this out because it will enhance the education that we need. Because per the investigation or the interviews that you've had, clearly it appears that panelists are confusing Get Fund with Ghana Scholarship Secretariat. I am here today to represent the Ghana Scholarship Secretariat. And your interview with the past Auditor General referencing Dr. Matthew Puku Prempe and Ajua Safo and what have you, were awards given by the Get Fund.
Yeah, he didn't confuse that. He was clear about that.
And not
yeah.
Ghana Scholarship.
He was clear about that. The point there was that Get Fund had usurped the Scholarship Secretariat's role. So in that audit, they actually advised and recommended that Get Fund should stop and leave you alone to do the thing, the job. But you should also have policies, guidelines for how you do it.
So that is why, and you rightly quoted the Get Fund Act, Section 2.2b. So from time to time, Get Fund is mandated to give us supplementary funds. And it is clear that that particular fund coming from Get Fund is supposed to go into the second cycle accredited tertiary institutions for local consumption. Now, Samson, I will indulge you that as to whether we are constantly receiving that fund from Get Fund and whether it is adequate enough to sponsor every local scholarship in Ghana, I'll leave that to you. You are the journalist. But the point is that if your other colleague or your other panelist has evidence about these serious crimes that he has professed, I think it is only clear that you do not have to wait for this opportunity to come out. We will assist so that we bring the perpetrators to justice.
When we are done, we may have a discussion.
Yes.
And for good reasons, purposes of avoiding victimization, yes, of certain people, I've received emails, yes, directly to my email. As we speak now, I am receiving WhatsApp messages from students who are beneficiaries who are abroad.
Yeah.
Of course, a good number of them talking the positive.
Yeah.
My phone number is not public.
Yeah.
How they got it, and suddenly all of them are flooding my phone, yeah, with it. I've been in this job for a while. I know how this would happen. Mm. But there are people, not faceless people,
yes,
who are talking about the racketeering, who are talking about the unfair treatment. I put up the Reginald. He came for an aptitude test. He got 93%. Reginald is a brilliant guy with the pharmacy subsector of our economy, doing a lot of work. He didn't get it.
So it is important that we get to know the processes. Samson, getting 100% in the aptitude test is 25% of the procedure. It will also be fair for educational purposes that we get the background, because as it stands now, all the armory in Ghana and the media, fourth estate and multimedia, are towards the scholarship secretariat. And as I jokingly stated, that it appears that we are guilty before we were charged. Hitherto to 2017, how was scholarship secretariat being awarding scholarships? Between 2012 and 2009 to 2016, how were we awarding scholarship? You will sit in Accra and let people from, I did a bit of investigation, I don't know whether you are from Upper East Bongo or something, I got names from this current administration. We have all awarded scholarship to these guys, and we will talk about that later. But then the scholarship secretariat will sit in Accra, and people will travel all the way from Upper East to come and prove to the scholarship secretariat that, in fact, they are brilliant and needy. Now, this particular government and this young, hardworking Dr. Kingsley Ajiman come into office and says it is not fair. How are we going to make this fair so that the right, needy, brilliant people get the scholarship? And this is what we did, Samson. Mm. The decentralization is not good enough. However, what we did was that we will get the people who live in the locality, who are the best people to determine that these particular students are brilliant and they deserve the awards. So this is the criteria for the committee. We then have a traditional rep from that district to be part of the scholarship review committee. We then have an MP or his rep, irrespective of party colors. We have the current DCE or the MCE to be part of this scholarship review committee. Then we have the educational district rep, and then a staff from scholarship secretariat. So you do the aptitude test. We shortlist the aptitude test based on the median score. We invite those who are skilled through for interview. For the interviews, you are marked on these criteria. Your academic merit, depending on the grade that you go, we give you a mark. The motivation to pursue a particular course, your comprehension and general knowledge. So after this interview, the panel grades and recommend that these particular students are in need of scholarship. And this is what we've done since 2017. So if you look at the record, And that is why, although I commend Four First Aid, it comes back to your question that the period between 2019 to 2020, Samson, this government had awarded 61,500 local scholarships. In that same year, for foreign awards, we had awarded 2,911 scholarships for foreign awards. And I don't know whether we do have the time. I would have explained to you that even for foreign scholarships, there are two different types. We have the bilaterals and the non-bilaterals. So let's focus on the foreign awards that we awarded. Mm. So if you pick 3,000 of the foreign awards that we awarded, and you cherry pick those who are politically or the elite inclined. I did the calculation yesterday. I know, and it was about 0.5% of the data set. I am not a statistician. I am an engineer and a health worker before I got to the scholarship secretariat. But I've watched you for years, Samson. If after this program we run a random sampling test on your credibility on this work, and then you get to find out that half a person out of 100 is not satisfied with your job, does it mean that you are worse at your job? Yes, we are a human institution, and it is very important that these outliers do happen. But I will indulge our viewers that we will take a critical look into these things, because the caveat for
what you refer to as outliers, caveat, hold on there. So some of the scholarships, those who beneficiaries who got, that is raising eyebrows. Just let's look at just a couple of them.
Yes.
And then you'll explain why they would be qualified. And we're showing them now, one after the other.
Yes. I am particularly
this one.
Yes.
Go back to the first one. The first one that just came. She got it for internship.
Yes.
She got it for internship in the International Criminal Court. Yes. People are asking, internship, scholarship of $6,000 USD or how much for is, and then, so the rest of them, you will see that this is a high-ranked diplomat and is getting this much. Why a diplomat? Why should he be qualified? The next person, also a diplomat or so. The next person, an MPP youth activist, $27,000 US. The next person, Ashanti Regional Youth Organizer, 5,000. The next person, this also high-ranked diplomat, gets this amount. The next person, 17,000 MPP youth activists. The next person, 28,000.
This is actually
Ashanti
inaccurate.
Regional Communication.
For Frere. It's inaccurate. He did not get scholarship from us.
His name is in there. Then we keep showing you. Let them roll as you answer the question.
How do you
explain that they are able to find, you know, dozens of people who are MPP executives and who are people who are also high rank officials and people who are connected to MPP executives and high rank government politicians?
Yes, I think we should not get into, as I explained, over 3,000 awards have been given, and you've cherry-picked less than 20. I've done the maths. But if we are going to be fair, and which Brimer said here is going to be published, as I sit here, I can guarantee you that across the spheres, even multimedia here, we've awarded scholarships and trainings to some of your staff.
Mm.
Does it mean that they are rich and they do not need the scholarship? Let me read the mission of the Ghana Scholarship Secretariat to you for our viewers to be clear. The Ghana Scholarship Secretariat exists to utilize Government of Ghana funds, get fund, donor funds and other funds for the provision of scholarship to brilliant students and qualified Ghanaians at a minimum access cost for human resource development and national growth. And so it does not specify that we are supposed to give
to needy.
No, the needy bit is technical, because we are getting supplementary funding from GetFund. And you look at the GetFund law, section 22B, it clearly stipulates that money that we are getting from GetFund should go to local scholarships.
Yes, that apart.
And they
yes,
have that, made
that apart.
That their funding is for local scholarships.
Good.
And for the award.
So you say it doesn't matter a person's affluence, they can still get it.
So, and that is why Dr. Kingsley Agyeman, since 1960, we've established this Ghana Scholarship Secretariat. This is why he is the only registrar since 1960, has been advocating for a legislation to give us an enabling act. So it is important that we have this national discourse without emotions and passion. Because if we do that, then we will know that if you are a public sector worker, you do not qualify. If you are MP, minister, journalist of your stature, you do not qualify. Neither do your relatives qualify.
They bring out, I will not be asking for any. I'm not Opoku Prempe who says, if he gets it today, he will take it again. Okay? I do not need his wealth.
I'm saying your relative might need it.
So you hold on. So now I'm saying that, how do you defend to anybody, for example, that somebody of the stature of somebody they refer to in the vice president's office, the wife's office, he got whatever and never even attended, and yet X amount, is it 50-something, was paid?
So in a more lighter note, if you really want to be fair, that particular incident, I am quite surprised that they actually linked it to the second lady. Because if the particular person in question is related to the second lady, he is also related to the MP of Adenta.
Okay.
So why is the focus on the second lady? We should be clear. And what justification can we give? That because I am related to a rich man, then that means that I am rich.
Okay.
So there is the need for this legislation to make sure that what we are doing is in tandem with the act that will guide our awards of scholarship.
Mm.
So if you go onto our website, it clearly defines that we are also allowed to give awards to qualify workers at minimum access for human resource development for the purpose of national growth.
Mm.
And so if a worker from multimedia find a short...
So for example, you have a number of people you have given to go train as lawyers.
Yes.
Okay, and one of those they flag is the daughter of Freddie Blay.
Yes.
Now, are you saying there's a purpose, a national service purpose for that kind of award? That the person will bring service to the country, or that there's a certain kind of law that the person was sponsored to study that we don't have the human resource, then they will bring it to help the country. Is that it?
Yes, I believe that, for example, the first lady that you showed that had that internship to go to ICC, legally it's not wrong. Morally, I have been thinking about it. And what are the odds that you will find a Ghanaian? You are a lawyer, I'm an engineer and a health worker. What are the odds that a young Ghanaian girl will have the opportunity to have internship in one of the highest courts in the world, ICC? You see, if
people who already have a good paying job wherever they are in the UK or in the US, and they are still accessing your fund.
That is why I am really, really happy to be here, because this will open the gateway for a legislation act.
Mm.
Because how is the secretariat going to assess that you have enough money to pay? Now, the only criteria for award of scholarship secretariat, and we shouldn't confuse GetFund with scholarship secretariat, is that you must be, number one, a Ghanaian and have an admission. And so if you are a Ghanaian...
So, Richard, this is what I'm going to do.
Yes.
We will ask you to commit, so we bring you back.
Thank you.
Then we commit some time to explain properly,
yes,
as they continue to churn out more of these stories in the course of the week.
It is very important.
So we have a commitment. We'll have you next week. We'll continue this discussion. Our time is up.
That's all right.
Okay.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.